Thanks for coming for the short notice. I know, at least for me, this is a really bad time. Jet lag is killing me. And
permission?
3 hours. What do we expect? I got up at 5 this morning. No, but for many of you, afternoon will be a tough time. So in case you want to take a nap, I just want to show you the data first. Pretty much the data shows following. These two compounds, SMB6 and YB12, are narrow gap insulators or narrow gap semiconductors. Origin is probably strongly correlated, but just from the data itself, it behaves like semiconductor. To our surprise, in very first compound in magnetization, we start to see oscillations. Furthermore, as I told some of you already, the oscillation amplitude or the dominating feature seems to break the bulk rotational symmetry. So in principle, every 90 degree, by the way, this is a cubic structure, which means every 90 degree, the pattern should repeat itself. Some does, but the oscillation amplitude seems to prefer one direction rather than the other direction. Okay. Furthermore, for YB12, we not only repeat the oscillation pattern now in much higher field, of course, but also we're able to observe in this insulating regime where we see the wiggles in resistivity. By saying insulating, I'm not sure what kind of insulator it is in such a strong field. What I meant was, as I changed the temperature from about 0.7 Kelvin to 12 Kelvin, you see that resistivity actually drops, which means it follows a semiconductor-like behavior. Whether or not we have a well-defined activation gap in that field range, that's another question. I don't think I can really give you a solid answer there. But bottom line is, in this regime, we start to see wiggles. And if I have time, I'm going to show you that the wiggles, the oscillation period, the angular dependence, will be completely different from those where we completely change the insulator to metal with strong enough magnet fields. In this regime, I'm going to show you more data where we see the pockets gets, the orbital gets much, much bigger and many, many more. So that really turns into a field-driven metallic state with many more pockets.
In case we do fall asleep, how much does it depend on the sample?
Good point. Semiconductor hexafluoride, the dominant feature, by the way, thanks a lot for getting me back to talk about this. I think 4 years ago, I came here for my second KITB visit. And that time, this is where interesting thing happens, where we're able to see, observe some features a year earlier. And then the teacher was able to reproduce most of the features, but adding something more. There, I'm going to show you more data, but there they observe a signature of the oscillation amplitude, oscillation orbital size that's as big as copper. That's a particular interesting. Unfortunately, none of the other groups, including ours, was able to reproduce it. So I'm going to show you for semiconductor hexafluoride the feature that at least now 3 groups are able to reproduce. Right. YB12, the oscillation in, well, we reported the first, oscillation in magnetization was also reported by Sutra's group. Those in resistivity, I think she had to do a lot of subtraction to resolve some wiggles. I know this is a center for theorists. I'm not trying to go into detail for sample preparation, but one particular interesting feature is most of SMB6 compounds were prepared by so-called flux method, where all kinds of theories can go into. But it was growing at relatively low temperature. So there's always a concern about, for this compound, what's the role of aluminum in that. Now, for YB12, it's the other way around. The one with flux method will never grow this right phase, at least right now. So it was grown in floating zone method, in the sense sample now is isolated away from any other impurities, any other metals. But downside is it will grow probably in 2400 Celsius or even warmer. And such hot temperature tends to probably change the valence a little bit. And it's still open question about how the sample perpetuation changes the property. What I can tell you right now is for the limit four samples we had, that pattern was well reproduced. Hey, you can take a nap now. Okay, so this was a project we carried out for many, many help from growers or from other friends. And in particular for SMB6, now we have five different groups sending us samples, letting us check the features. And it's well reproduced. For YB12, it's a rather challenging compound to reproduce. And we are lucky to have Professor Iga to provide us crystals, full samples, and we're able to check for all the compounds in all the conditions. If I have some time, I may show some data from Matsuda's group about thermal transport, but I suspect I may not have much time left in that. I appreciate all the possible collaborations, and let me try to go on. One thing I want to say that this is an interesting way to prepare the talk. In two sense, I think half the audience listened to this talk before, at least the first part about Samarra Explorer. Whereas the other half audience probably never met it before. So I'm trying to mix different features together. I'm going to use the five-year-old data in SMB6 as an introduction. I'll quickly go through that. Hopefully my feature there would give you a sense about why at that point we thought Victor's theory can explain our data. And then I'll show you something really exciting when Suchitra presents when the other group presents something quite unique. And suddenly many, many more theories are interesting in this compound, and I will not be able to tell you which one is right, which one is wrong, but I'm going to show you two sides of different data sets and to give you some idea about what might be constrained for the theories. Okay. All right, and again, this is I'm an experimentalist. I have a group, and they are really clear. And particularly for the second part, the resistivity oscillations, my postdoc Zizi Xiang really did everything. He's on the market, so if you guys are interested in hiring a good guy, he's very good. Okay, so as I said, I will try to use SMB6 as an introduction to give you some idea about how to understand the data and where everything's coming from. The new data sets, YB12, I'm going to step by step going from what happens with resistivity and then magnetization, and how we can compare that with strong magnet field and see what's going on. Okay, this is a rather old compound. How old it is? I think my colleague Jim Allen keeps reminding me that in late 70s he had this compound and tried to argue it's an intrinsic insulator, and he asked Phil Anderson at that point for some advice, and Phil suggested him try to do Hall effect at different temperature. I knew that's old. Last year, I talked with Duncan Haldane, and Haldane told me that SMB6 was his PhD thesis topic. All right, so it's a compound known to have an activation, and
experimental.
What do you expect? All right, okay. So the key feature is this heavy metal compound turned into an insulator. And the reason why it turns into an insulator is because of strong correlation, in the sense that you would have maybe some localized F electrons and then some internal D electrons. At some point, the common screening would make the small gap or hybridization gap. And once you have a small gap open, maybe just 10 MeV. And for whatever reason, the carbon potential now sits inside that gap. You start to observe this insulating behavior. So for whatever reason, the valence has to be the right point, right? I think I chatted with some of you about different valence or different in this compound and how it differs from one to the other. I think that's something really unique when you think more about that. But bottom line is now, since the discovery of SMB6, there are probably in family about 10 to 20 well-defined and maybe about 50 and more intrinsic counter-insulators. And I'm just giving you a list, those involving F electrons and some arguable D electrons. This is a long list, and I you can imagine that in past 5 years, how many compounds we tried. We tried this field, we tried the other field. Eventually, we're able to get to YBB12 compound to show that not only magnetization, but also resistivity started to show some weakness. All right. Now, of course, the unique feature happens when resistivity stops divergence at very low temperature. This gap, or maybe from this data set, this our data, you see that from 3 Kelvin to 30 Kelvin, it's about 4 orders magnitude change in resistivity. And yet, such strong divergence stops right here. All right. So there are different origin, a different discussion about what's going on. Probably that already thousands of papers talking about why and how. There's idea that maybe the gap itself is not well defined. There's some maybe intrinsic bulk in gap state, or maybe it's the surface just some dirt that stops divergence and makes it conductive. Well, of course, this came few years ago. No, it's more than a few years ago. Almost 10 years ago, when my colleague Kai, Victor, Pierce, and Max came to suggest that as long as hybridization idea comes out, right, then there must be band inversion. And such band inversion happens to would make SMB6 look as a bismuth selenide, which means that you're going to have a topological protective surface state. And they argue that particular surface state is why, even on a sample, it shows a well-defined gap, but the surface is still conductive. That's why the resistivity itself will never go to infinity. Okay, so such idea came, and well, I have to say this is big audience for theorists, but I grew up from high TC field, where theorists like to predict, but eventually for us, they really post-dict. I was actually very surprised that theory worked in this case. Bottom line is my colleague Charlie and many other groups from Irvine's group and from Maryland, they look at potential either surface tunneling or the surface transport, and they made a strong argument that the conduction happened at surface. It's very isotropic, and well, a good way to define or model that is to assume that surface is a good conduction and bulk is a good insulator. All right. Once those three papers came, there are many photo emission data. I think now there are maybe 20 or 30 now. Tunneling or STM data and quantum oscillation, we did the first, and then Schuster group was able to get more very interesting data. And finally, the Lost Arms group was able to show something more. All right. When we learn about these results from my colleague, my natural response was, if it's surface, if it's clean enough, I'm going to see longer level quantizations. And once I see longer level quantizations, right, this prediction is you're going to have a Dirac electron. So it's just like graphene, right? I'm going to just do it like what we did for graphene, looking at the quantum Hall effect, or at least quantum oscillations, right? But it never worked. We push up to 45 Tesla, which takes probably every year or every half year to get the time for, which did not happen often, at least when I was there. Each time we would have some issue, they would kick out, and they told me that I always, for whatever reason, whenever we were there, their magnet tends to break. But eventually we got the time, we got the best device, we got our colleague try to make the Corbino disk and make try the other good device polished and try to measure the electrical transport. I was just hoping that it's like graphene. We can determine oscillation pattern, we can determine orbital size, we can determine the angular dependence to show it's two-dimensional, and further we can even determine the shear phase for the direct dispersion. We never saw anything. You see that up to 45 Tesla resistivity is really smooth. No matter what we do, taking derivative, looking at the Fourier transform or the whole thing, no feature. It's pretty much just noise. Yeah, so my students told us I was really disappointed. I told them, you see, life in a lab always sucks. No matter what you do, the first attempt always failed. So, so don't blame your collaborators that they did not give you anything interesting at 30 Tesla yet. Very first, 30 Tesla magnet may fail, and then the technique may fail. Eventually, probably after 5 years, the poor student may be able to get something. All right. Now, transport did not work. What do we do? I was hoping to try something else, which we started doing magnetization or magnetometry. What we did, very simple, we tried to measure how the sample turned on the magnetic fields. In other sense that if sample was able to have some dipole moments, then just like magnetic compass or magnetic field, we try to bring the dipole moments to the same direction. Similarly, this is not a similar X4I, this is just bismuth. This was when I was still a student at this point. Putting a sample on a floppy cantilever and try to apply field, they will turn, and I'm measuring the small deflection by tracking the capacitance between this cantilever and a gold film underneath. So typically, this distance is in the order of half millimeter. And we're able to resolve the capacitance between these two down to about a part per million level. So which means it translates in the order of roughly astron or sub-nanometer detection of this small deflection. Bottom line is following. We're able to detect some magnetic moments for the whole bulk sample. That's much, much better than a commercial wavelength magnetometer. And the key thing is we are able to use this simple setup to go to, 65 Tesla impulse field now, and go cover a really broad temperature range, which is needed for this particular study because we need strong field, low temperature to resolve what happens in strongly correlated compounds. A little thing about labs. Right? You see that I have the whole thing sits on a piece of penny. You guys know what pennies are, right? Okay, because in China, nobody have pennies anymore. Bottom line is I show this to show you size, which is like a centimeter size. I also show you this to show you how cheap we are. We just make tons of them, try to detect what's going on. All right, so with those setup, with our own dual fridge and with the hybrid magnets going to 45 Tesla, we're able to detect something. I'm supposed to be there next week. I just got a message from the director there saying that the hurricane is coming. All right. Okay. Now, a little bit more introduction. SMB6 is a very nice cubic structure compound. YB12 is the same thing. So, such simple symmetry give us opportunity to understand the pattern. And that's how. You see that I have the sample with well-defined phases. 001 or 110 or even those 45 degrees away. Those phases are 110. So this is top view, and here I'm doing a scheduled side view. So that means I'm going to pretty much rotate the field from one to the other axis and try to track in each orientation what happens to the oscillation pattern. Okay, so we managed to get some data in some rounds. Very first, we saw wiggles starts about 5 Tesla and 10 Tesla and show more and more coming out. And we look at magnetization to field, and this is up to 45 Tesla. And low fields is linear. Nothing surprising, this is a paramagnetic compound. We start to wiggles about 5 to 10 Tesla and even fast wiggles on top of that. even the fast wiggles start to beat. So that means we have multiple orbits, different oscillation frequencies. To resolve this, we look at the Fourier transform of the oscillation pattern versus 1 over h, and each peak here tells us the orbital size. Okay. Now, this is just one spectrum in one particular angle. One particular angle, what the kind of orbit we expect to observe. And this is a many, many angle we put it together, many different rounds put together. We try to resolve how that different branch goes. I know this is very hard to follow. It's hard for me to follow. This is how we can try to understand the pattern. Again, I'm looking at the sample from side view. Each time, you see that I can bring each branch and color something. And how we color that? The reason why we color that way, you can see that I'm finding this branch would reach the minimum about 45 or 46 degrees. Well, remember, this is oscillation pattern. Whenever you have the narrowest one, or when field is along that particular direction, you will have the smallest oscillation frequencies, or orbital size. So that's exactly 45 degrees here. So I'm coloring this part. Maybe it's from surface, or maybe just a cylinder along this direction. But bottom line is, by tracking the angular dependence, we'll know where and how it's coming from. So again, we do the same thing, and we track. We also find out the 100 families are doing something. Again, you see this branch and that branch. Again, you see why we are counting in this way, because we find out about 90 degrees, this peak reach minimum. Okay, so we keep doing this. We can build up angular dependent oscillation frequencies, the orbital sides. And for each of these two dominant features happening around 400 or 300 Tesla, you see that they follow this 1 over cosine angle dependence. That's what expected out of quasi two dimensional dispersion.
I didn't understand, what is on the vertical axis?
That's a very good point. You see that I have my spectrum here, Fourier transform spectrum here, as a way to determine the oscillation frequency, which is nothing but the orbital size in that particular direction. Now imagine you have a cylinder, Fermi surface, right? This is narrowest. It's getting bigger, bigger, eventually going to infinity. That's what I'm plotting. I'm plotting the orbital size measured in different angle. The fact it follows this kind of one cosine angle dependence, just saying that I'm finding an orbital that looks as if coming from a cylinder Fermi surface. Or at least bottom line is if it's ellipsoid, it's really, really elongated ellipsoid. All right, okay. So we follow this pattern, One particular thing that I always point out is following, right? It's not only following one cosine angle dependence. The minimum shifts here is 0 or 90 degrees. Here is 45, 135 degrees. This is why we color this way. Some is coming from this direction or the other direction, but some are coming from this 45, 135 degrees. Oops, my bad. Okay. All right, okay. So I'm taking a really long introduction, but this is a talk I gave about 4 years ago as an introduction for you guys, but at that point I thought we learned about the compound, we learned about theory from Victor and others, and we thought it's done. It's something really boring, just like bismuth-silane. Yes?
Weren't there also reports of something that looked like a three-dimensional?
Yes, I'm going to show you. Right. So 5 years ago, I thought this is nothing surprising. It's just like bismuth-silane. I'm almost giving up on everything following that. Then the Cambridge group, like you point out, report something really unique. So what they reported, they may not frame it that way, but when we talk and look at it together, we find out in the raw data, the dominant feature is this guy. In the second paper, they also point out that's their dominant feature. And that pattern and this pattern we look at together pretty much agree at the same data sets. The difference, of course, is they model their data as a, not as our cylinder-like, rather it's ellipsoid with aspect ratio 3:1 or even 4:1. To me, that's pretty good to say it's quasi two-dimensional. But most surprising part in their data is this part, where they reported oscillation frequency or the orbital size in such level. I know this may not make much sense to you guys, but roughly speaking, 10 to 4 or field by 10 to 4 is the size of Bleuon zone, which means if they really observe such orbital size, you're looking at noble metals. You're looking at orbitals like noble metals, like copper, like silver, like gold. That's very surprising. To add a mystery, they, like we observe oscillation only in magnetization but not in resistivity, they report the same thing. Nothing happens in electrical transport, just in the magnetic torque. So there's really a mystery about whether we have a two-dimensional orbits or three-dimensional orbits. Coupled to that, there's a missing of electrical transport, oscillation in electrical transport, which I would say that contribute to huge excitement in theory friends, and they gave, yes.
Yeah, so motivated by this excitement, we ran a working group in Aspen last summer with
right.
one of the members of this Cambridge team participating,
right.
and we were asking them, do you guys still have samples? Can somebody check the results? The answer was no, we don't have any samples.
No, I think they do.
Also what they mentioned is that, well, once they see this data, it disappears under annealing, where just in 2 weeks you remeasure the sample, it's not there. So I was thinking it's all just fake. Basically,
okay.
not working on this stuff.
It's
so
this pattern or that pattern?
Has anybody tried to reproduce this stuff apart from the Cambridge
right.
people?
Yes. So here comes the detail of sample growth. Dominant feature we have and they have now is coming out of the flux method. So you just melt everything together, eventually it'll come out of good crystals. Those patterns, they reported coming only from the samples made by floating zone matters. That's the reason why I'm talking with, I talked with Tara McQueen to get a floating zone sample and try to measure quantum oscillation out of that to reproduce their large orbits. Did not happen. We reproduce this pattern or this pattern, but nothing seemed to show up here. So in that sense, this part is a mystery.
But they themselves don't have the samples anymore. Isn't that surprising to me?
I think different guys from their group may give different answer. The thermal transport sample, they actually indeed cut and polish, try to study how where the size limits their thermal transport. I don't know the answer, but again, I'm an experimentalist. I'm not ready to argue that some particular feature would never happen. Maybe I just do not have good samples, or maybe my measuring resolution is not strong good enough, or my field is not strong enough. So I'm willing to try any scenarios and go into different directions and see what's going on. That actually comes following why I'm doing two different directions trying to answer the question.
I ask again the question: how to read this plot? So basically,
right.
all these letters, this epsilon, rho, and so on, that corresponds to what? To different modes which you observe.
That's a very good point. So. If we ignore everything here, all the letters here, it's nothing but the peak value of the spectrum I showed you. The spectra I showed you earlier, measures, the location on that peak measures how large the orbital you observe, right? So we call this branch as beta, just how we go from alpha beta gamma. And they call it from something else, particularly they call it rho. The reason why it's coming from that was because they tried to compare their data sets with Lasm hexaborer, or LAB6, and they saw similarity. And they used the notations for Lasm hexaborer to note their pattern. But to me, actually, the first exercise I did was I just take their data, the values, and try to compare. We put the models on the data to make a story. To actually, for me, I just following the suggestion, well, ideas from Victor and Pierre's paper, because I would not believe an insulator showing quantum oscillations at that time. That's why we stick with two-dimensional fit. But now I'm seeing all kinds of interesting ideas coming out. And you see that I'm just list six of these. There are probably 60 more talking about what might be going on.
So from the experiment, is it given or now clear that it's a bulk feature?
Ah, that's a very good point. For SMB6, I'm going to show you some data to see that, for me, it's still likely surface contribution happening there. I'm going to show you why we still believe that. Bottom line for me is, even if it's a bulk, surface is playing an important role there. I'm going to show you why for SMB6, we're still debating where it's coming from. For YB12 data later, I'm going to show you, the angular dependence seems to strong point to the bulk feature. All right, okay. Now, let me quickly go through my data and how we understand the pattern. Many theory, and there are very interesting ideas coming out and suggestions about what we can do. Now, how I view this point, how I think about what's going on. There are two questions we need to answer. The very first, we need to answer whether it's a bulk or surface. I'm going to show you a way that we design as a control experiment to show you guys what's going on, or at least give you some idea what's going on. The second, the most puzzling feature for us was, no matter how we tried hard for SMB6, we never observed oscillations in resistivity. Cambridge group did not observe that. Now, Los Angeles group did not observe that either. So that was a nightmare for us. Again, I'm an experimentalist. I'm not willing, or I would never give up to try to search for something. I'm rather going to looking for the best common to find out what's going on. Not able to resolve oscillation resistivity is a really big concern. Now, let me say the first challenge, right? Whether oscillation comes from the bulk or surface. I think many friends ask us, why not do control experiments, in the sense that you have a sample like this, right? Chop it in half and see how the oscillation amplitude change, and chop, and see how the oscillation amplitude change, right? Whether it's coming from surface or coming from bulk, they have a different geometric aspect ratio. Then you know. We're still trying to do that. We try to measure and polish. Just remind you, each round we need hybrid time, it's every year. So we never succeeded getting something completely systematic they study. But what we did, at least in some samples, is following. I'm looking at samples with some ugly shape. So I was telling you that samples should be a cubic structure, which means that this way, it's similar that way. Right? Now I choose some ugly sample with something really big one direction, smaller on the other direction. And in this particular case, you can see that the sample has a much larger area in one direction, much smaller area on the other direction. We studied many compounds, and this is a compound that happened to give us the best feature for us to study. And we look at the oscillation amplitude versus field, right? And down to 40 millikelvin and up to 45 tesla. So we try to look for some new features in temperature dependence we did not observe. But really, what's new feature comes from here. You see this ugly sample, many different branches. Now I'm packing everything together, assuming that we can follow each line. And each line is one cosine angle dependence. I try to argue as a cylinder-like dependence. But the key feature, both groups find out that this branch and that branch gives a huge peak. It's rather easy to reproduce. All three groups now reproduce that peak, which means I'm just going to look at this pattern. Red is where I'm having field around this way. Blue is when I have field around that way. It's one of all, again, it's one cause angle dependence, at least within this data set, suggesting it's a quarter two-dimensional. So you can imagine there's a quarter two-dimensional orbital this way, quarter two-dimensional orbital this way. And the fact that they repeat the same pattern every 90 degrees, just telling you that sample, the orbital size follow the four-fold crystalline symmetry. It's a cubic. Orbital size this way and the other way should be the same. Nothing surprising. What's surprising was when we look at the oscillation amplitude here. The oscillation amplitude along this direction actually is twice or even bigger than the oscillation amplitude of the other direction. For whatever reason, the oscillation amplitude breaks the four-fold symmetry, rotation symmetry of that cubic sample, bulk sample. It's gone. All right. So we further try to understand the pattern, and we find out the dominating factor determining the angular dependence oscillation amplitude is, well, nothing surprising. It's just your mobility. It turns out that the one with a rather high oscillation amplitude is those planes, or at least those directions with really good mobility. And the other direction were those with small mobility. So some samples breaks, some other samples does not. Which tells me that for whatever reason, the oscillation amplitude still care about the mobility in certain directions. How could it be? I don't know. I don't know yet. But here's my suggestion. Whether it's bulk or surface, the shape, the surface roughness still plays a very important role about the oscillations in this compound. True. Okay. So that's the first thing, right? We look at the common pattern, and we find out there's some symmetry breaking for SMB6. Yes?
So your results, are they different from Cambridge, or are they the same? If you look there, actually, forget the interpretation.
Right.
Are they the same or different? So yes or no question.
Same.
Okay. So but you interpret them as surface, they interpret them as some mysterious new quantum phase of matter in the bulk, right?
Right. So let me put two things. My data and their data, whatever we can do, straightforward measurements, is the same pattern, same data sets. What I look at as extra angle, looking at oscillation amplitude, not just orbital size, I observe symmetry breaking. Whether or not, yeah. Like, look at this, right? Imagine this is a Semmering Hexplorer. If it's a ball cubic sample, cubic structure sample, magnetization oscillations on this direction, with field this way, when field that the other way, should be the same. It's a ball, right? My pattern show it's different. Oscillation on this direction is bigger than oscillation on the other direction.
And they have also this data on the amplitude?
No. That one they do not. That, at least they did not. But they did not talk about that.
You're saying the amplitude mobility and the mobility of bulk probably is very likely or possible that the mobility at different phases is different.
Exactly. That's right.
Okay.
Right. So for me, the straightforward answer why it's different, just saying if I believe the surface roughness, then the surface roughness on these planes is much better than the other planes. That would be a simple way to go around that. But I'm not there yet to really exclude the possibility of Ball oscillations, particularly given what we are going to show next.
And you can change the surface mobility by putting something into your design, getting more data.
This is a very good point. So what we try to do is following. So it's rather challenging for us to measure something and evaluate something at surface and see what's going on. But Colin Bernheim's group was able to intentionally put additional magnetic impurities, in this case gallium, going from their isotope clean compounds with 1%, 5%, even 10%. So what's surprising for us was even for 10% compounds, we saw oscillations. But oscillation amplitude is much smaller, which means mobility is much, much worse. So you see that looking at different angle, I'm not there yet to argue it's completely service. Otherwise, why would 10% gallium doping, magnetic doping, not killing everything?
You mentioned there are two ways to float it, this floating zone and the
right. So the data I'm showing here is everything based on flux method.
And this is the method which produces less impurities or more? Can you remind me which one?
It's subtle than that. There are two ways. There's an impurity coming from flux phase.
Right.
Or coming from whatever the impurities of starting compounds. Flux method is more sensitive to those impurities. Floating zone samples with that growing in much, much stronger, higher temperature, but isolated environment, is most likely free of these impurities. The trouble is it's high temperature, and according to Zach Fisk, such high temperature growth may start to change the valence and change whatever disorder, so creates more defects in these compounds. Yes, okay, good. All right, so my second challenge, right, is really the old data. I never saw oscillations in resistivity of SMV6. That was a nightmare for us. And everyone know that. Everyone hammered me on that. I tried to give a hand-waving argument, but I know in my heart, right, I'm an experimentalist. I'm not ready to say that it's not there yet. Really, we need to try compounds, try different environments, see what's going on. For SMB6, I'm still trying to do the thermal electrical measurements to see if we can see any oscillations in like non-spec or thermal power and see what's going on. But the other approach is to try to look at other condo insulators, hopefully topological condo insulators, and see what's going on in those compounds. And as I told you, right, I give you a huge list. We tried every possible compound that we were able to get from our collaborators. Eventually, this compound was able to do. And that answers the question, whether oscillation comes from charged particle or charged neutral, whatever feature. So this is a compound that we were able to eventually find is working, because that for YBB12, early data already suggests that even in very low temperature, a 45 Tesla magnetic field is enough to convert the insulating feature to conducting feature, to close the gap. All right. So we look at its resistivity. It's pretty much the R versus T or Joule versus T looks almost identical to what happens in SMB6, which means activation energy gap scale is about the same. And here is what we started in stronger fields. Even 45 Tesla, before the gap is closed, you see that from 4 Kelvin to 0.3 Kelvin, I still see about two orders of magnitude change in resistivity, enhancement as we cool down. So it's a semiconductor-like behavior. And when we look at resistivity itself, we start to see wiggles. I, and we look at the location of these wiggles in different temperature, they stay in the same field value. So this was a good check for us, because if it's a field-driven transition, no matter how many wiggles we observe, once we change the temperature, the location of those wiggles should move around. Typically drops as we warm up. So from this, we knew something was going on there. And then we used even stronger field. We push up to 65 Tesla. In this particular case, I'm looking at resistivity versus field with a pulse magnetic field up to 65 or 40, 55 Tesla. So two features we observe. The very first, you see that a huge negative magnetic resistance, but at some point it flat. So you have some feature coming from gap closing. But once the gap is completely closed, that's just simple metal. The magnetic resistance is nothing but whatever you expect from simple one-band metal. And that closing field from what we started here is in the order of 46, so in that level. That depends on some sample. Some sample is slightly smaller, about 45. Some types push about 50. But roughly speaking, it's in that level. Okay. We know where the field-driven transition is. Next step, we see the wiggles. Again, as I emphasized when we started, going from low temperature to high temperature, my resistivity drops, which looks as a semiconductor behavior. Here is how we look at this. So even in such field, we still look at the semiconductor-like behavior, and yet there are wiggles on top of that. Okay, here's what I'm trying to emphasize, going to much stronger fields, nothing surprising happened. It's just simple magnetic resistance from a simple metal. Now, I confirm that those wiggles in resistivity. The next question, of course, everyone asks is, what happens if those wiggles are coming from the high-field metallic state? Maybe some isolated islands inside the sample, it just happened to have much, much smaller critical field. As a result, what are the features that happen in intense field? Now, just reproduce here. That's why we look at what happens here and see the orbital size. You see that if that idea is right, then I'm going to have oscillation pattern, same as oscillation pattern and low fields. Of course, I'm using low fields, just mean that from 35 to 45 Tesla, compared with those in 65 Tesla. Now here's the data. We were able to detect the feature with a contactless resonance technique. I'm not going through the detail, but bottom line is this oscillation, this resonance frequency is just proportional to the conductivity. And you see that above 50 or 55 Tesla, we saw wiggles again. And from those wiggles, we're able to determine the orbital size again. This is what we did for spectrum, Fourier transform spectrum, and location of these peaks tell you the orbital size. I'm contracting this data size, the orbital size here, and with those I reported before. This pattern comes from what we observe in the insulating state, 800. Those coming from this data set is about 20 Tesla higher in field, and we start to see that the dominant peaks are going to much stronger fields, means much larger orbital size, and many more orbits, right? So one, two, or maybe three here. So in that sense, the pattern I observe in the semiconductor-like behavior, in the so-called insulating state, in relative low fields, have an oscillation pattern completely different from what we observe in much, much stronger metallic state.
You're in the insulating, there's some extra feature, right?
Say again?
In the insulating, there are some extra shoulders after...
You mean this or that?
In the insulating.
Yes, okay, here.
No, but in that same figure, aren't there more features?
You mean here or here?
Sorry.
Which figure?
Next slide.
Call me panel. Panel A, B, C.
It's lower right.
This guy.
Yeah, the black. I'm saying the extra features here.
Yes, this is a very good point.
If I count, I would say again there are three features. It's not as pronounced as the other one.
Right. I'm not ready to say that it's never been there or must be there, because as you can see that I have only three or four wiggles, it's likely to determine one period. To determine modern peaks, it's challenging. All right.
So this material has been proven to be topological insulator,
or about? It was argued to be a topological crystalline insulator.
So why is it surprising that you see oscillations from this?
Right. No, it's not surprising. No. But of course, I confirm also show oscillation in magnetization. I find out that oscillation in magnetization actually has a different origin as that in resistivity, in the sense that I'm looking at that from oscillation in magnetization, the mass is still heavy, but only about 6, whereas I'm looking at oscillation from the resistivity, it's now going to 15, much heavier than what the typical SMB6 does. But you see the difference. So they may come from different origin yet. Now, this is where it's surprising. When I look at the angular dependence from that of the Hasse-Weinhoffen magnetization, again, I have 3 or 4 or 5 wiggles. There's huge error bar. But I can model that as a cylinder, like what we expected out of a surface state or topological crystalline insulator. The trouble is, whatever we observe in oscillations in resistivity or SDH effects, this divergence is faster than a cylinder, which means that it's going to hyperbolic, means like it looks like the touch neck of two large orbits, two large firm surfaces. So this feature seems to suggest that we're looking at a bulk phenomenon. If it's coming from surface, you expect that the oscillation frequency versus angle follow a one-way cos angle dependence. There's some way to go beyond that. Actually, Joe told me last year about how the magnetic ordering could couple and make the cylinder-like behavior looks as a hyperbolic behavior, like what happens here. We're still trying to look for those, but trouble is the compound that my friend studied was magnetic. What we studied here, nothing much to change the magnetization. It's not much differences between B and H. So there's still something to figure out. Okay. Now you see that I don't have a solid conclusion yet. I'm able to reveal oscillation resistivity in one insulating like behavior, one counter insulator. Are they coming from topological nature or not? I'm not there yet to conclude. But I can tell at least I'm looking at different symmetry, different way. But bottom line is we finally have a compound that seems to show oscillation in both magnetization and in resistivity. It's not only coupled to magnetic field, now it couples to electrical field. So in that sense, I argue that no matter what final explanation would be for these oscillations, they're electronic. Okay. With this, thank you for your attention.
So, any interesting data? Questions?
So, I'm confused by when you say the electron. You have two different kind of oscillations.
True.
So, could it be one of them is coming from something which is coming from some?
Yes. Yes, it's possible. I agree. The two different kinds of oscillations and coming from two different compounds. For SMB6, I'm not there yet to argue whether it's electronic or not, right?
In the
yes, even YB12, my current data sets would not tell me about how the oscillation in magnetization, what happened there. But one thing I want to point out. You see that no matter what we do, right?
This is ytterbium, right?
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Even for SMB6, following the same way. The oscillation amplitude follow what you expect out from liquid theory. It follows the so-called LK formula. You have a way to go beyond that, but I try to emphasize to different audience that do not go something really exotic yet, because the data that the Cambridge group presented in their very first paper was misleading. I think that feature actually Kaufman group thinks I'm really exotic. And then try to come back to try to explain our data. It's challenging. But the key feature, at least from our data sets, the oscillation amplitude itself versus temperature, it's very conventional.
Just to make sure, I mean, at the beginning of the talk, then you had oscillations in the Samarium DC.
Right.
They were following the cylinder, curvature was really very in very good agreement with
a
cylinder Fermi surface.
That's right, that's good, right.
That's what you're saying.
Okay. Right. So only in this particular compound, even we observe oscillation in resistivity, we had a hard time modeling those data sets with cylinder-like Fermi surface.
But only from the resistivity, but from the metallization, it's like in SNDC.
True. See, that's why trouble happens.
with the hexaboride,
right.
Are there any signs of spin modulation in the oscillations?
This is a very good point. So the question comes from this, right? The oscillation perfect world is just one peak, but not perfect world means that you have Fermi surface, you have wave pockets come back. So what happens in that way? It means that you're going to have a dominating feature, and then the second harmonic. And third harmonic, fourth harmonic. So the way to determine that the height of the second, third, and fourth harmonic, there are many, many factors. Factors including the smearing coming from temperature, smearing coming from the dingle or coming from disorder, and smearing coming from the Zeeman energy splitting or the Fermi surface. So
it's not necessarily smearing, it's a modulation.
Exactly, that's right. So that means that if you have a conventional metal, then your spin up and spin down start to shift, and the shifting would actually give a modulation of oscillation amplitude. Now, if it's a simple single spin species of oscillations, you will not have this feature. So back to your question, we look at really hard to looking at this pattern to understand the species of spins in these compounds. So we saw the oscillation amplitude of in the harmonic pattern keeps dropping. However, we're not able to make 100% determination whether it's a single spin or not. Because given only three harmonics we are able to resolve, it's not clearly following the expectation of single spin species. So back to your question, I don't have a solid answer for that question yet.
Maybe I'll ask
you. Yeah, sure.
So I guess the key question, of course, is whether or not the SMB6 oscillations in your Casson Alphen oscillations require some sort of new phase of matter with neutral excitations and Fermi surfaces. Well, that'd be kind of cool, right? But then there could also be a mundane explanation, and I kind of have the latter, based on something that the Cambridge group mentioned, namely that they see these things disappear if they anneal the sample. I don't know if you have heard this. So it's known that the SMB6 undergoes a pressure-induced insulated metal transition.
Right.
If you have a sample where you have a lot of stresses built in, maybe some local regions where there's some metallic inclusions because of that, this would produce you some local and gapless regions, which would give rise to all this stuff. But it's not obviously an interesting scenario you can publish in science, but I mean, maybe a natural explanation. So I'm wondering, does your data survive? If you anneal your sample, do you still see?
Right.
If you remeasure it in 2 weeks, do you still see it or you don't see
it? So what the Cambridge had was something really strange, really unique. Whether or not that feature is dead after annealing, I'm not sure what they refer to.
But my stuff,
the sample we measure this year, a year before, and 2 years ago in the same data. That's the reason why we chose. We were able to get samples from five different groups to confirm all these features. These groups may differ slightly from their growth technique, different conditions. Now the Maryland group samples, the Johns Hopkins group samples, USTC sample, and then Zach-Fix sample in the early days, and then Los Alamos group samples.
But we're not saying you see neutrals and things. What are you saying? Do you say in your paper that you observe this neutral fairness surfaces, or you don't say that? What's your message in your paper?
SMB6.
Yeah.
For SMB6, I will confirm in 5 different samples. And my message there is still surface dominated in the future.
So what about this stuff?
With it charged. And it's charged.
For SMB6, I do not have electrical transport to support its charge yet. For this compound, I have 4 samples come from one group, and from what we can observe in that feature, it's a bulk feature. Resistivity oscillation is a bulk feature. Right. Actually, it's quite surprising for us that we are able to see oscillation in magnetization for that relative less band, but we are not able to observe that particular branch in the resistivity. That's why we need more study and try to figure that out.
Metal, magnetic field induced metal to insulate transition.
That's possible. We do. Laser. Yeah, so that happens too.
This may not be a very interesting question, but does the, when you have a large magnetic field, you go to a metal.
Right.
Is that metal a heavy magnetic field? And if so, what's the effective mass?
Yes.
If I plot effective mass as a function of magnetic field, across the metal insulated transition, how does it look?
Yes, this is a very good point. So based on resistivity measurements, this is our later data sets, we're able to push up to 85 Tesla. What we observe, those below the metal insulated transition, we have a mass in the order of 14 to 15 ME. As we go beyond that, the orbital size, as I told you, gets bigger, and the mass gets smaller.
Other questions? No other urgent questions, let's thank
you. Thank you, guys.